Speaking of love, this is this new grandbaby. He was born this morning. I'm going to have a tear. He was born this morning at 5:41. Isn't he cute? Jessica and Patrick don't know I'm showing this picture, so don't tell them. Yes, speaking of love, I think I'm in love with this little person. His name is Arlo Jacob Rushelow. 8 pounds, 2 ounces. A nice start to life outside of the womb for sure. I was sitting in my living room with two good friends last week. One friend spoke of the challenges that he was dealing with regarding what he saw as the limits of Christianity. Christianity, he said, as he's made his hands into a telescope before his eyes, is often so narrow. He went on to describe how he sees our beliefs as sometimes getting in the way of seeing the broadness of the love of God. What about other religions, he said? What common ground could we share? What more could we learn about God if we reached out to other faiths in love? Does Christianity need to always be what it always has been? What about how people hold on to their wealth in the church? It doesn't make sense to me, he said. It's like we're so content, apathetic, sleepwalking. As I was listening, I felt a need to defend what I had come to know as Christian faith in the church. It doesn't have to be narrow, I said. But then I stopped trying to play defense. I realized what I was doing. I was not really listening to my friend speak about his doubts and questions with how the church is called to and what it is. I sent him a text later apologizing and stating I was curious about what he was talking about and inviting him to tell me more. He described himself, even though he was involved in things of the church, as being on the margins and looking in because he had a different perspective about what followers of Jesus are called to being. He felt that his voice was not being heard. His sharing reminded me of a story Cynthia Bogo, an Episcopal priest, author, lecturer, and writer, tells. Here's the story. Once upon a time in a not-so-faraway land, there was a kingdom of acorns nestled at the foot of a grand old oak tree. Since the citizens of this kingdom were modern, fully westernized acorns, they went about their business with purposeful energy, and since they were midlife baby boomer acorns, they engaged in a lot of self-help courses. There were seminars called Getting All You Can Out of Your Shell. There were woundedness and recovering groups for acorns who had been bruised in their original fall from the tree. There were spas for oiling and polishing those shells and various acorn homeopathic therapies to enhance longevity and well-being. One day in the midst of this kingdom, there suddenly appeared a naughty little stranger, apparently dropped out of the blue by a passing bird. He was capless and dirty, making an immediate negative impression on his fellow acorns. Couched beneath the oak tree, he stammered out a wild tale, pointing upward at the tree. He said, "We are that." Delusional thinking, obviously, the other acorns concluded, but one of them continued to engage him in conversation. "So tell us how we become like this tree." "Well," he said, pointing downward, "it has something to do with going into the ground and cracking open the shell. Something about love." "Insane," they responded. "Totally morbid. Why, then we wouldn't be acorns anymore." Cynthia describes one possible reason for the narrowing of Christianity. She says that perhaps it's because we live the story of Jesus with 20/20 hindsight. We know the story. We know how the plot comes out. When we approach the Jesus story with the attitude, "I've heard that already. I know what that means," we fall asleep rather than allowing ourselves to be shocked away by his words, shocked awake by his words. We become comfortable with what we are, acorns, when Jesus is offering a different way of being, life as an oak tree. We're living in an era right now, various writers contend, which some would call a major paradigm shift, where there's an opportunity, as perhaps there hasn't been before, to really open up the core questions again and ask, what is that what we mean by Christianity? What is this filter or veil that we're looking through? Who is this master that we profess and confess in our life as we call ourselves Christian? How might we become that oak tree? Back to my friend in our conversation. You have may have had similar conversations with someone, or have had some of these questions yourself that he was asking. I just want to say that having questions and doubts about faith is not something to be discouraged. In fact, I think that these questions should be encouraged in the church, in the safe space. Too many people I know have drifted away from the church because there was no safe place to talk about questions and doubts. There was little room to let others know in the church community about who they really were and know that they would be accepted and loved no matter what. Brian McLaren writes, when grounded in an experience of love, doubt does not represent a step backwards, but a necessary condition for any forward movement. This conversation with my friend and the fact that I was thinking about this sermon caused me to think about Jesus and his commandment to love, about the church, and how the church is called to be a school of love. Now, this term school of love is not mine. I first encountered it in a book by Brian McLaren. The book is called The Great Spiritual Migration. And it was continued in another book by Roger Joslin called The School of Love, Planting a Church in the Shadow of Empire. Each of these books brought a similar perspective of what the church could be as a demonstration picture of the school of love. I have leaned on these books as well as the love chapter in 1 Corinthians 13 and the challenging words to us from 1 John as the basis for my words to you today. So first of all, let's start off with Jesus. The New Testament makes it clear that Jesus was about love first and foremost. Jesus began with the love of God. In fact, naming God is love, but inseparably linking that love with love for neighbor. To Jesus, there were no boundaries between people. Nothing could separate anyone from God, no class, culture, illness, gender, economic status, or race. To Jesus, loving the neighbor was the same as loving self, and he lived that way. Jesus taught that abundant life that God wants for all people is a life symbolized by wedding banquets with stone jars filled to the brim with good wine. All people are invited to the banquet. Everyone is invited from highways and byways. All are invited to join the party. The good wine is for everyone, not just a select few. In the process of inviting everyone to the party, we also invite the prospect for personal transformation. When we practice hospitality and invite people to the table, we are changed, and when we encounter the other. Also, if we look deeply at the source of hospitality, we see how it is inextricably linked with Jesus' larger sense of social justice. Making a place at the table for the stranger is a way of saying, I respect you not because of who you are, of the social position you occupy, but because you are a human loved by God. Hospitality and justice go hand in hand. When we go about our daily lives with an awareness of the example of Jesus' way of love, healing the sick, caring for the poor, reaching out to those at the margins of society, we are just as likely to encounter the movement of spirit where we live, as well as in our church walls. I would like to tell you about three examples of love I've noticed within the last 3 months. First, a conversation with my neighbor. My neighbor stopped by to chat when I was out in the yard the other day. My neighbor has had two near-death experiences in the past year and a half. The first one, he fell off a ladder, breaking ribs, his shoulder, hitting his head. No one was there to help him. He crawled to his truck, called a friend who drove out, took him to the hospital where he stayed for several weeks, and slowly recovered. The second incident was a heart attack. He went to get something from his car, collapsed behind his car. A passerby called the ambulance. He was revived twice on the way to the hospital. Stents were put in. He recovered physically. He was transformed spiritually. He says he has no fear of death now. He says now he sees possibilities of engagement with others wherever he goes. The barriers are gone. He engages in conversation with people at the little market box for an hour or more. People who he does not know start talking to him about their lives, and he engages with them. He says he has encountered the source of all light, and now he knows he is alive for a purpose, to open his own light and to be open to the light of others. He now has a young man, 35 years old, living with him, renting a room. This young man is having challenges with finding his way in life. My neighbor admits to finding it challenging, difficult to reach the light in this young man, difficult to show love. I asked him if he wanted to quit, send the young man home. No, he said. We are called to continue to love even when things are hard. The second example. In mid-June, I participated in a webinar through the Saskatchewan Association of Social Work, Justice Committee. The webinar speaker was Jason Mercady, the CEO of Prairie Harm Reduction, the safe injection site in Saskatoon. I learned that Prairie Harm Reduction not only provides a safe environment for persons who use drugs, but also funds a home for young adults who are aging out of the foster system and have challenges mostly caused by mental health issues. They also are engaged in a program to keep parents and children together who have been involved in the foster care system or are at risk for this. The staff is minimal. Yet Jason spoke of each person they encounter as important. Each person who uses drugs matter. He speaks of drug use as a health concern. He spoke of unnecessary deaths that are happening in Saskatoon by overdoses. No deaths have happened at the safe injection site. He spoke of anger at the government for not seeing the need and the importance of their work. He spoke of gratitude for the people of Saskatchewan who gave to their fundraiser to keep them going and open. He spoke of the necessity to speak truth to power. He spoke of engaging those who care and letting go of those who don't. Jason is a voice for those who don't have a voice. Example 3. I am involved with taking a conflict transformation class through MCC SASC. One of our speakers was Manuela, who spoke to us about racism. In her job at the U of S, it is her job to engage the medical community to consider all aspects of racism. She spoke about the Anti-Racism Network, a group of over 30 organizations. She spoke to us about racism, not just discrete incidents or events, but insidious messages normalized within institutional practice, often under the veil of good intentions. She challenged us to think and reflect about which places we experience dominance and where we experienced oppression in our own lives. We were to think through what we have to gain and what to lose with changing the status quo we are part of. She left us with these questions. Am I willing to question structures that benefit me? Do we do justice work because of a responsibility from benefiting from being here in Treaty 6 territory, homeland of the Métis? You, I'm sure, have your own stories to share of where you see people are speaking for those who have no voice, when injustices are spoken about, where people are being challenged to see the light in others and to share their light. The church. The church is called to be a demonstration of the love Jesus talks about, love embodied. I imagine that at its very best, the church can be a place where we accept an appropriate level of responsibility for each other, a place where differences can be celebrated. Church is a place where in relationship with others we can most fully be known and be really as we really are and where our interconnectedness as a community of Christ creates and molds our truest self, a place where Christ abides. Brian McLaren describes church in this way. Creating and being home for one another is what it means to be church. A home where we can learn to be love in the world. A home where we are nurtured, nourished, grounded, and sustained for the work of being love in the world. The kind of home where we learn from one another how to be about the work of creating justice, which is what love looks like out there in the world. Roger Joslin, the author of School of Love, Church Planting in the Shadow of Empire, tells the story of his conversation with an individual who had history in the church and had moved away from it. The church described how he did not feel comfortable in the church, feeling that he would not be truly accepted because he liked to wear dresses. Roger, an Episcopal priest, did not miss a beat, and stated that he also wore a long flowing robe during the service, so he did not feel there was a problem. The person began to attend the church and was welcomed, loved, and accepted. What he wore was of no matter. The more important question for Roger's church was, how can we help each other? How can we help each other to be our best loving self? Another story from Roger regarding church. He tells the story of a time he was sitting in a cafe and struck up a conversation with the waitress. He was wearing a clerical collar, so the waitress had a bit of a heads up that something was different about him. He relates this story. "What are you?" she asked. After telling her about myself, another question naturally followed. "So where's your church?" I happily told her, giving directions and address. However, what I really wanted to add is, come and see. Because the question that I wanted to answer isn't, where are you located? But I wanted to answer the underlying question she may have had. Where do you abide? What are you about? Who are you people? And is this a place where I can be loved? When Jesus offered his disciples an invitation to come and see, he was asking them to take the first step in a journey of discovering what it means to be truly loved, to find love that is abiding and enduring. What if the church had one goal and aim, to show and embody love? McLaren suggests a practical suggestion. He suggests that every committee meeting happening should read 1 Corinthians 13 before the meeting using these words. Our main goal in this meeting is to practice the way of love. Every difference, every tension, every vulnerability, even every mistake will provide us an opportunity to grow in love. At the closing of the meeting, inviting a prayer time, confessing where we have not walked the way of love, and celebrate where we have. The Love Chapter. Chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians lays out, Paul states, a more excellent way for the church community in Corinth, with a description of love. He names exactly what love looks like when he puts into practice. It is complex. It includes patience, kindness, slowness to anger, delighting in truth, enduring all things, hoping all things, love never ends. Ooh. But you can preach all you want, move mountains with your faith, but if you don't have love, it's a gong show. The writer of 1 John tells us we love as a response to God's love. Fear is let go through this love. Our response is to love our brother or sister, our neighbor, the other. If we don't show love, we are liars. Ouch. As we begin to understand the freedom from fear given as a gift by God, our own ability to love beyond the boundaries we once knew can also grow. This is what the kingdom of God is like. It grows within us and overflows so that we can be co-creators of the kingdom of God here and now. God is shaping us through the work we are called to do. God forms us, not just as individuals, but as a people, to accomplish God's purpose of reconciliation. Being called to love might mean a change of identity. It might mean becoming something new, living in new ways, worshiping in new ways. Who knows? Being called to love may require change. They will know us by our love. For centuries, Christianity has been presented as a system of beliefs which has supported a wide range of unintended consequences, from colonialism to environmental destruction, subordination of women to stigmatization of LGBTQ2S people, anti-Semitism to Islamophobia, clergy pedophilia to white privilege. What would it mean for Christians to understand, experience, and embody God as the loving, healing, reconciling spirit in whom all creatures live, move, and have their being? What would that look like? Love is spoken about by Jesus, Paul, and the writer of 1 John is complex and not always easy. The church as a school of love is a place where people can experience a widening of their circle of compassion and love. Barriers that separate us are broken down. We realize that at our core, we are all one in the Spirit. This circle of compassion and acceptance then expands to the greater community through each of us into where we each walk and live. The church as a school of love is a training ground where we can lift each other up, flex our muscles of empathy. We can let go of ourselves and focus on the other. We can be servants to each other. In this, the Spirit strengthens us to go out and open our eyes, seeing Jesus in the community, and perhaps join in his work. So this week, I'd like to encourage you to read 1 Corinthians 13 aloud every day. Jot down your thoughts. What are you hearing Jesus saying to you? At its heart, Jesus' message was a call for personal and communal transformation. May it be so.